And I started writing things like, well, Funk 49 and The Bomber and Tend My Garden and a bunch of those songs. And there's an attitude you have to have with a three-piece group, and that is, hey, go for it. Testify. Somebody count off and let's go. We'll rehearse after the tour.
Need you to beg my pardon, in my garden.
How you doing? I'm Bill Walsh. We're back in the studio for the James Gang Rides Again.
You'd be hard-pressed to find a bigger rock star who made his reputation from one album than Joe Walsh on the James Gang Rides Again. They were in many ways the essence of working-class American rock and roll in the early 1970s, a no-nonsense band whose sound was as powerful as a steelworker and as steady as an assembly line. That lineup was as simple as a rock band can get. One drummer, one bass player, and one guitarist. But the sounds that guitarist created and the songs that he wrote were a unique blend of British and American styles, a distinctive combination of lead and rhythm and slide guitar techniques. The band was the James Gang. The guitarist was Joe Walsh. The band's founder and namesake was drummer Jimmy Fox, who formed the James Gang in 1966. For years, they were the reigning kings of Cleveland, Akron, Canton's rough-and-tumble club scene. But it wasn't until Walsh joined that the James Gang began to draw national attention. It was their second album, The James Gang Rides Again, that made them famous. Released in 1970, it's referred to in the Rolling Stone Record Guide as one of the most important rock records of the 70s. I asked Joe Walsh to reflect on the James Gang and their legacy.
I think maybe the James Gang could possibly have been one of the first heavy metal groups. We were certainly ahead of our time. The heavy metal groups seemed to play with no dynamics at all, just everything up all the way. And that's the only difference I think the James Gang had from being a heavy metal group. I don't consider myself as, you know, the big brother or father of heavy metal at all, but I've heard compliments from people in heavy metal bands that they grew up listening to things like Funk 49 and Walk Away, and that's rewarding. Makes me feel good. Funk 49 was all live in the studio. It was one of the easier songs because it was spontaneous. That whole middle part where there's all the percussion was just Jimmy Fox playing drums. And after we had it on tape, we went back and put some percussion on it and some yelling and screaming and such. And we didn't really know what was going to happen at the end of it, at the end of the middle part. So I just, for some reason, happened to play that lick going back into the last verse. And it was just the magic of the performance.
Joe Walsh was born in Kansas, but grew up in Montclair, New Jersey, just 30 miles from New York City. Joe's mother was a classically trained pianist and accompanist for the New Jersey Ballet. Joe was a clarinet player in the high school band, but his first rock and roll instrument was the bass.
In high school, I was in a band called the Nomads. My first band was called the G-Clefs. I decided to get out of that band because you couldn't get any girls if your band was named the G-Clefs. I remember watching the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and I remember my parents shaking their head left and right and me shaking my head up and down. And I said, I want to be like that. And they said, no, you're going to college. And I said, no, I want to be like that. So I went to college.
The college that Joe Walsh chose was Kent State University, just outside of Akron, Ohio. Walsh took an odd assortment of classes, everything from music theory to welding. Not that any of it mattered. It was at Kent State that Joe Walsh got serious about playing guitar.
I had gotten a Rickenbacker guitar and a Rickenbacker 12-string and a Vox amp. And that was my pride and joy. See, in those days, if you looked like the Beatles, you could play anything. It didn't matter if you were good or not. I very efficiently flunked out of school in 2 semesters. I ended up with like a 1.2 or something. I never went to class. What I did was I used to sit in the dorm in the fire escape because it had good echo. And I taught myself every Beatles song there was. And I really worked hard at learning every song that came out of the British Invasion, note for note. And at that point, I really hadn't begun to write yet. But I would recommend that for any and all musicians. The strongest you can be is to know every note to every Beatles song. People would come to watch me play, and your bird can sing note for note. And 20 years later, Ringo told me George couldn't even do it. He double-tracked it. That and Dear Prudence. I could play those note for note, and they couldn't. John played the top 3 strings, and George played the bottom 3 in Dear Prudence. And I said to Ringo, you mean I spent 5 weeks of my life and I can do it and you guys can't?
Good thing that I had, I
Walsh flourished in the music scene surrounding Kent State, practicing for hours on end, learning to improvise instead of simply duplicating the licks he heard on record. Joe joined a local band called the Measles and built enough of a reputation around Akron to draw the attention of Jimmy Fox. Guitarist Glenn Schwartz had just left the James Gang to become a member of Pacific Gas and Electric, so Fox needed a new guitarist. He offered the job in the James Gang to Joe Walsh in 1968.
Glenn Schwartz was really good. Really, really good. He could play circles around anybody in Cleveland, including me. And it was a gamble. I had some big shoes to fill. But I figured I'd gone about as far as I could in Akron and all, and my band was unstable. It was either join some other local band or get in the best one in Cleveland. It was time to make a move, and I thought in the longevity of a career or stepping up a notch, that was the best thing to do, and I figured I could eventually learn anything I needed to know. So I went for it.
Yeah.
we come back, you'll hear how the James Gang got their first big break. Be sure to follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear more rockstar interviews at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Joe Walsh for the James Gang Rides Again anniversary.
How you doing? I'm Joe Walsh, and we're back in the studio for the James Gang Rides Again.
I'm Redbeard. When Joe Walsh joined the James Gang, they were part of a burgeoning Cleveland rock scene that would produce a number of significant musicians. Joe Walsh remembers one in particular.
Of course, there was Cyrus Erie. That was a band that Eric Carmen was the leader of. One time at Mender Hullabaloo, we went in the dressing room and caught Eric Carmen putting a sock in his pants. And we thought that was hilarious, so we all put socks in our pants. It'll never live that down. How you doing, Eric? There was a great camaraderie and great competition back then. Anyway, the James Gang asked me to join, and I did. And we played in Cleveland for about a year and a half. And Jimmy Fox, the drummer of the James Gang, was pretty hard to get along with. Like, if you were late at rehearsal, you got your head torn off. Or if you were late to the concert, you got your head torn off. Which I respect now. In retrospect, you did the right thing. You ran a tight ship.
Tend My Garden, written by Joe Walsh, and an indication of how his songwriting was already outgrowing the Power Trio lineup. When Joe Walsh joined the James Gang, it was a five-piece band with a rhythm guitarist and a keyboard player. Walsh remembers the night that all changed.
We were asked to go up to the Grandy Ballroom in Detroit, which is a famous old place. All kinds of people played there. And we were going to open, I think, with the MC5 from Detroit. We were going to open for the Cream. And we just happened to have a band fight the night before. And two of the guys, they decided to quit. So when we got to the Grandy Ballroom the afternoon of the Cream concert, and we got a call that the two of them had quit and they weren't coming, and so there was Jimmy the drummer and the bass player Tom Chris and myself. We figured that that was it, the band was over, and that we'd broken up, except the three of us looked at each other and said, well, we really do need to play because we don't have any gas money to get home. And so we went on before the Cream and played an hour, and I had to sing. I mean, songs that I didn't normally sing, but I had to sing and play. And it was a real challenge. We pulled it off and got a standing ovation, and Eric had come a little early and was standing on the side of the stage and shook my hand and said, I very, very, very much enjoyed what you did. You're really going for it, aren't you? And I said, well, yeah, I had to.
Necessity indeed being the mother of invention, Walsh had stumbled onto the guitar style that would become his trademark, a style that quickly established him and the James Gang as a band to watch. Soon they were opening for big-name acts such as The Who. Pete Townsend was as impressed as Eric Clapton had been, and he invited the James Gang to open on The Who's 1970 European tour. Any thoughts about replacing the members who'd quit were quickly forgotten.
We grouped and we practiced a lot. We played live a lot. I mean, I couldn't sing either, but I could sing better than the other two guys. So I got stuck with singing. It put me in a position where I had to sing and play guitar. I wouldn't have if I didn't have to. The other thing is, it put me in a position where I was the only melodic instrument in the band. And that's where I really learned. And of course, Pete Townsend helped a lot by studying him. But I learned how to play, I call lead rhythm guitar, because you can't stop playing rhythm to play lead. You notice it too extremely, and you can't stop playing lead to go back to rhythm because the contrast is too much. So I really developed my style that way because I had to. And I really didn't do anything. It's being in the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the right time, some combination of that. But you can't be a legend in your parents' basement. You can be really good and practice, but you've got to get out and play, because that sets up situations that your career stands a chance.
One of those who recognized the James Gang's potential early on was Bill Zimzik. In 1969, Zimzik was the head of A&R at ABC Dunhill Records, and soon after hearing the James Gang, Zimzik signed them to his label. Bill produced their first record called Your Album in late 1969. He was also the producer on James Gang Rides Again. By the time of that second album, Walsh had clearly evolved into the band's dominant force, writing all the songs, pushing for more complicated arrangements. The James Gang Rides Again was the album where Joe Walsh hit his stride.
It was a welcomed responsibility to have to write. And I wanted to write, and I was writing good. And so I did. And I was very, very happy because I could translate the songs that I heard to record, and they were accepted. And I could also go play my music live instead of somebody else's music. And that's really when you break through. There's an awful lot of bands that will try out an original song or two. And if they go over, that's nice and all. But to be able to go on stage and play your own music and have it recognized and appreciated by an audience is a whole different ballgame than playing cover songs, whether you play them really good or not. It's a whole different level.
Thank you.
When we return, we'll hear how Joe Walsh decided that he needed new musical horizons and why he chose to walk away. Be sure to follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear more Rockstar interviews at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Joe Walsh. The James Gang rides again.
How you doing? I'm Joe Walsh, and we're back in the studio for The James Gang Rides Again.
And I'm Redbeard. Although many of the songs on James Gang Rides Again remain true to the style that the band was known for, others were considerably different. For instance, Ashes, The Rain and I featured a 20-piece string section. I asked Joe Walsh how his songwriting had come so far so fast.
Confidence, knowing that you can do it, has everything to do with it. I was confident, and when I went on stage, I was secure. You know, to this day, I feel more comfortable in front of 10,000 people with a guitar on than I do at a party with 6 or 7 people I don't know. I know what to do, and I know that people are there to hear me play guitar, and I know that I can, so I do.
Sometimes I sit and I stare at the rain. Isn't see my home again? Will it be dry tomorrow? Time passes softly and I'm a day older, but still I'm living days gone by. Ashes to ashes, the rain's turning colder, finding tomorrow the
Bill Simzik arranged for the strings to come in. We really wanted to do that, and we got it on the budget. Now, it's pretty expensive to do a 20-string date. What was funny was we did it, and what you do is, if you get a good take, you always tell the string players that it wasn't quite right, and let's try it again, and then you double it. So you have 40 strings for the same money for a three-hour union session, right? But stupid me, I ran out and said, hey, that was tremendous. I tell you what I'd like to do is I'd like to perform it again so we can have 40 strings. Now, that immediately qualifies as another 3 hours. So Bill Simzik was hitting his forehead with his hand, going, you idiot. So we had to pay him double.
The James Gang lineup had changed for the album Rides Again, their second, with Dale Peters replacing Tom Criss on bass. This was by far the James Gang's most successful album, making it into the top 20 album charts and turning the band into an arena-filling headline act. For everyone concerned, it was a creative peak.
Well, I was in full bloom by that point in terms of writing. I had decided that our music and James Gang music, which was basically me because I was the only melodic instrument, I had decided that that was the way to go. And I think the great stimulation of having the confidence to be on stage in a three-piece group really brought about a creative stage. And I started writing things like, well, Funk 49 and The Bomber and Tend My Garden and a bunch of those songs. And there's an attitude you have to have with a three-piece group, and that is, hey, go for it. Testify. Somebody count off and let's go. We'll rehearse after the tour.
The follow-up album to The James Gang Rides Again was called simply Thirds, released in the spring of 71. Again, produced by Bill Simzik. Again, Joe Walsh was the dominant creative writer. But Thirds didn't come close to matching the sales of Rides Again, and the music reflected Joe Walsh's increasing restlessness. So in late 1971, Joe Walsh left the James Gang to embark on a solo career. Jimmy Foxx kept the band together for another 5 years and another 6 albums, but the heyday of the James Gang effectively ended on the day that Joe Walsh decided to walk away.
I wanted to be in a band where there was keyboards and where there was harmonies and just more than guitar, bass, and drums. The other thing, and I think this is important to realize, is that any band gets together, goes through the process of turning from a group into a true band. And there's magic for an amount of time. And at some point, which you have no control over, a band runs its course and is done. And don't forget, we were together like a good year and a half before we even made our first record. I was thinking differently, and the band had really run its course. And I was also getting stereotyped as America's kick-ass guitar player, and I didn't want to be that all my life. And I was young and crazy, and the James Gang Rides Again album came about, and I guess that really goes down as a very memorable album for a lot of people. It was special because it just happened to be a combination of events where we were recording during a very creative period. And I fondly look back to that.
This is Redbeard in the studio thanking my guest, Joe Walsh. For interviews and exclusive live performances by the biggest names in rock, visit inthestudio.net. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Barbarossa Limited Productions. Copyright 2011, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunette. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Be a part of the In the Studio Network at inthestudio.net.